Welcome to Energy Matters, where we explore alternative health in the Pioneer Valley. I'm your host, Caroline Rutterman, and I'm a Reiki professional and intuitive in Northampton, Massachusetts. For the past 9 years, I've been teaching people how to use their intuition and helping them reduce stress and anxiety. Together, we'll talk with other practitioners and learn how they bring health and healing to the Pioneer Valley. Let's do this. Hey, welcome, welcome, everyone. You are listening to Energy Matters, and I am your host, Caroline Rutterman. And we are here today, and we have a very special guest. We have Molly Scott. Welcome, Molly.
Thank you, Caroline. I'm absolutely delighted to be here.
I am feeling the same. So Molly is a writer, she's a poet, a therapist, an educator, a musician, and your office is right upstairs from Valley Free Radio, so that's kind of how I initially found you. I would often, in the evening times here, sometimes I pop in on the weekends because this is a very nice community, you know, at Valley Free, and I would often hear singing coming from upstairs, and some evenings, it was just so beautiful. And I remember one time I just sat out on the stairs and I was listening to this. Just, I mean, it was like angels were singing.
Oh, that's lovely.
And I didn't know what it was. I looked at the bulletin board outside your office, and I think it was the Vocal Voyagers. I'm not sure who does the chorus singing upstairs in your office. With, I know that it's you in your world, but what was that?
Well, it's my world, but it actually wasn't me. I wish I could tell you that I was an angelic choir, but haven't quite got that one yet.
That's okay.
That would be Vocal Voyagers would be Glenn Smith, and he has a group that comes in, and it's all improv.
It's so cool.
It's lovely, lovely stuff.
Yeah.
And I like to think that my studio sings all by itself.
Aww.
I'm in love with my studio. It's just such a wonderful space. And I very much appreciate being in this building. There's all kinds of music and healing and arts going on here.
Yeah.
So now I come down and get to be with you. And
yes.
Another plus.
I love it. And I got to listen to a couple of your CDs that were from, I think they were both from 1984, but one of them was We Are the Planet, which is such a beautiful photo of you on horseback with this great planet Earth behind you. It looks a little sci-fi.
And notice that I
cover.
Must be on the moon if the Earth is behind me. Did
That's
you get that part?
That's what I was
part?
Thinking. Yeah, I was like, you're definitely on another planet, or at least the moon. Yeah, it's a very kind of like sci-fi type cover. It's really cool. And then I also got a chance to listen to Honor the Earth and Each Other. And you have a great like Joan Baez style sound. And it's just, it's really beautiful folk music. And a lot of this is your writing. It was your songs and your compositions and everything. This is, are a musician through and through. Your work is, I was surprised at how, I was just listening to these and driving, and I was like, these are great.
Nice. Did anything particularly leap out from these recordings?
Absolutely. There was, I loved the Woodcutter's song that you had on here.
That's actually a traditional root song. That's not mine.
I thought that one was a traditional song, but you were the singer on that.
I'm the singer on all of them.
On all of them, yeah, yes. Absolutely. And then there was another one. I had just split from a guy I was seeing, so there was a really sweet track that just kind of, it just resonated.
You're talking about Waiting to Fall in Love Again.
Yeah.
Well, that's my bow to musical theater.
Okay.
That's my, sort of contemporary, non-folk evocation of my own life. And I even had a saxophone and drums on it, for heaven's sake.
How cool. Very fun.
And also, that musical theater training is, I think, shows up in a lot of my music. My kids call the style of music classifolk, because I have a classical music background.
Oh,
and,
very
and
cool.
And then I was in musical theater, so a lot of that seeps in. It's not exactly Stephen Sondheim, but, it's
beautiful.
Kind of not down-home Ozark either.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about, because you do a lot of sound healing now with your creative resonance training, and did a lot of the early training that you had as a musician, was that something that your early training as a musician, was that, how did that inform what it is that you do now? How did you transition that kind of, you know, pure music making, this class of folk that you're talking about? At what point did you shift into doing sound healing and, you know, the vibration, using vibration to heal bodies?
That's the question, Caroline. It really is, because my work as a therapist and in the whole realm of sound and healing developed from my work as a performer. So how far back do you want me to go? Birth story. I have a dog here right now who's trying to get in my lap.
Yeah, she's like, I want to sit.
She's very quiet.
She's welcome to get on the mic too.
Well, let me see if I can. I'll broad brush this for
you.
So I actually went to Smith. I came to this area back then, and was an English major and a music major, and studied classical voice.
Okay.
Then I went to New York after graduation, and I arrived in time for what has been called since the folk music revival time in the 60s.
Yeah.
Studied again with other classical music people, but also really came there to be a folk music person. And I started singing folk music when I was still in college.
Cool.
And went out to the West Coast and had sort of a double life. And that's a whole lot of other story that we don't need to tell. But the music part is that I was part of that sort of folk music 60s scene pretty early. And then I sidestepped. So you mentioned Joan. Joan Baez is a contemporary of mine. And there was a little pod of us long-haired folk music, you know, lady, woman folk music people. Carolyn Hester, Bonnie Dobson, Judy Collins, Joan, and I was one of them. So I was doing pretty much regular folk rooted music at that point. And then I sidestepped. I was asked to do a television program on CBS. I did it. I also sidestepped into theater and began to really put a lot of energy into training for theater, doing dance and music, and studied musical theater and work in musical theater for a number of years. Also did a lot of work in television. And then
also you have some great photos on your website, which is mollyscott.com, of your younger years in film and TV. And there are some, it was really sweet to be able to look through those.
Good. I had fun putting that together.
Yeah. If you're driving, just make a note of that, that mollyscott.com, who we're here interviewing today. And look through, because they're very much of the time and of the scene. And it's
the hair was very long.
You had great hair. You still do. You still have great hair.
Did I have that picture of there's a picture of me from one of the books in that period of Bob Dylan looking at me. I'm looking at somebody else, and somebody else is looking at, you know, it was one of those, here's a picture of da 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 da.
Yeah.
And I showed up in some of that early stuff.
That's neat. I like that a lot.
I left that scene in the mid-60s to move up here into a commune.
Okay.
And brought my two kids, and there's another story that won't be told today.
I know, you're leaving us with all these teasers.
I know, you don't think it's not deliberate. Oh. Well, it's a long life and a lot of stories. But musically, what happened is that when I came up here and got my hands and feet into the land again, I was brought up in the country, and I was never really a city person, although I lived there for a long time. And I really had quite a successful career in television and somewhat in theater, but, you know, I was pretty much in the New York scene for a number of years. But my spiritual life was really pulling me, and I really, when I had kids, I really wanted to get out of New York And so I came up here. I got an old farm, a lot of land, did organic gardening, became part of a commune, I'll leave that one for another day.
Yeah.
But what happened to me musically is that I began to write my own music.
Mm.
And the interesting side slipping here is that when I was doing folk music in New York and when I made my first recordings, I was doing somebody else's music. I didn't know I could write music. It actually wasn't until, I think the first song I wrote was for Bunny Rabbit on Captain Kangaroo.
Oh my goodness.
And I can't remember the song, but I did write a song for my daughter called Cows, which I sang on Captain Kangaroo. And then I wrote a bunch of stuff for Sesame Street, too. But then I also, at that same time period, really began to wake up with social awareness and became aware of the nuclear power plant that was near where I live in Charlemont, and began to write music with a different focus from my own experience and from my own awakening awareness. So then I was singing my own music, and I got, I was playing guitar and some piano then, and dulcimer and various folk music instruments, but I really got back into piano. And also when I met my music partner, Sarah Benson, began to do improv, just music from the air, and that was like, it was like coming home. So I began doing workshops with Sarah. Sarah played flute. And she and I put together a workshop called Finding Your Own Voice. And we started at Rowe Conference Center back in the 70s.
Cool.
And there's where the connection between therapy, which I wasn't calling it therapy then, but between this work that I'm doing now began. Because I'd noticed when I was performing, and I do love to perform, that something happened when I was singing between me and the audience. It was almost palpable to me.
Hmm.
When I was in a certain frame of mind, there was a connection that I could almost, I certainly could feel it, but I could almost see it. The deeper I got into my own sense of story, and this is where the theater came into.
Absolutely.
The deeper that I entered in a sense into myself, the more wide became the circle of engagement with the audience. And I thought, what is that?
When you say this kind of deeper into your sense of self, how did you understand that? What does that mean?
Then it meant actually developing a story. And I was working. Have we got time for a little recollected story here?
Let's have a little story. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. That's what we're here for.
All right. Well, I'm down in the, taking off my glasses so you know I'm getting insightful. I say that because I know people can't see me.
You're getting serious now.
I am. I'm downstairs in the very grody basement of one of the first folk clubs in New York. It was called Folk City. And at that time, it was called Folk City. Started out as a place called the Fifth Pig. And I was actually the first folk act to open it with a guy named Ed McCurdy. I was down there with the mice and the cockroaches in the basement dressing room. And a woman who later became a famous director, her name was Joan Darling. She was Eric Darling's wife. And she was a very small woman. She pushed me against the wall and she said, "Molly, you must study with my teacher. You are an actress and you have to study with my teacher." So, shortening the story, I did. And that's the sidestep that I took. And what it meant for me was getting inside the story of the songs that I was singing. Rather than just singing them in a beautiful way, I developed stories. And then I would enter into that story when I started to sing. I'd take a moment and I'd be that character.
That's really neat.
Sing from that character, yeah.
Is that similar to your embodied voice work that you do now, or is that kind of, is that a separate kind of thing that you that idea of stepping into the character, into yourself, embodying the story of the song, of the character, is that, how did that transition into the embodied? Because it sounds very similar to the embodied voice technique.
It's an interesting leap you just made.
I'm good at that.
The answer is yes and no. The concept of embodied voice that I use in therapy is actually the sounds that the body makes in the presence of emotion and feeling and story. And I just did that. So ah is one of them. I could say, oh, or hmm, or ah.
I do those sounds all the time, especially when I'm riding the elevator before I go to work. I sigh and I make these little sounds.
Yeah,
well, and it feels so good.
Well, they are the root system for your emotional expression. And they're non-cognitive. We call them vocables. The sigh, moan, cry of our deep emotional experience comes through these sounds.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah. Very whoa. So what we've really leapt into the whole therapeutic use of the voice as a healing modality in sound work. And it's Ashamo. It's a Titakamo. It's a Tachamalo Pata. So that's not a language that anybody else can translate.
But I feel like I understood what you were saying.
Exactly. And why did you? Let me ask you. Why did you?
Well, partly because I'm looking at you. I'm seeing the sparkle, your hand movement. So some of it was because we were looking. We're right next to each other.
Right.
We're facing each other.
We're in a resonant field also.
We're in a resonant field, right? So there's also that kind of back and forth. Our energy fields are back and forth with each other.
Right.
But there's also the way your voice was lifting and falling, and there's that the strength of it and kind of coming back. There's the little kind of intonations of how you were talking as well.
That's it. All right. So the voice, it's creating a frequency field, which can be read, which is non-cognitive. So I didn't have something to say to you that was really, I'd have to think about what it was that I would translate that back into English or French or Spanish or any known language. The languages that we speak are really boxes into which we put our experience. And when we go outside of those cognitive boxes, and we're really talking about parts of mind too, now we're talking about brain frequencies, then we enter into a territory which is in terms of our neural nets, the way that our brains work, we go into the limbic system rather than into the newer brain, the frontal cortex, where we have memories that go into language, where that midbrain stuff, where all the, you know, all the sensory goodies are, move into language in this newer part of the brain. And Chemakoba Sanatu Manabokotana, when I go back through my through the medium of my voice, I'm touching parts of a story that can again, if they are stuck or inarticulated, can be brought back into the language, into known language through the voice. I'm getting into this a little backwards, but ask me questions about it and I'll try to be clearer.
I'm following you. I'm with you so far.
Good.
When we're kind of creating this embodied voice, these verbal cues that are just coming to us, how do we know where these voices are coming from, or these sounds are coming from? And how do we, if we have something going on with our stomach, how can we, all right, I have like three questions firing at once, and I'm, I get excited, and I need to slow down for a second. So let's say, no, is this for something more like an acute symptom? Like if I kind of almost feel like I have a little tiny cold that's starting, could I clear it using this, or is it for larger trauma based, like is it for big stuff, or is it for more like acute? How can we use this?
Well, let me say that we are instruments for energies that are moving through us. So you can use these techniques for anything. You can use them for parts of the body. You can use them for parts of your story.
Okay.
And the work that I did when I did my doctoral work, just to go back into, you know, doing music as a performer and then the workshops and then understanding how vividly we can create stories for ourselves through the voice, that finally led me, after a lot of work, a lot of it in Europe and in other countries, to go back to graduate school and to say, wait a minute, there's really something here, and I want to be able to use this work in a more mainstream way.
Yep.
So I went back and studied psychology and got my doctoral work done using this work with a voice, and I particularly was focused on working with trauma, because when people experience trauma, often they really can't talk about it. Being speechless with fear, speechless with terror, is a real thing. The connections into the places in our brain where we can say are simply not there. So what this work does, in a nutshell, as it goes back into the nutshell of the midbrain, to where these memories are stored outside of context, fragments of memory. I remember the color of that shirt. I remember the sound of the siren. I remember the feeling in my body when, et cetera, et cetera.
I like that.
Yes. Let me set a context for you.
Okay.
Will be helpful.
All right.
We are, and everything is, vibration. Everything is in pulsation and vibration. Everything, the radio board, my dog who's sitting quietly over in the corner, my elbow, your toe, everything is frequency and vibration. In what an old teacher of mine, Joanna Macy, who founded her work through Buddhist streams, talked about coalescing frequencies. We're just temporarily a this or a that. So that's the context. That means that everything that we feel, everything we think, everything we touch and think of as real is really various frequencies of vibration. So, in many of the old spiritual systems, the basic generating story is that in the beginning was the word. In the beginning was a frequency. In the beginning was we don't know what the beginning was, but we do know that as far as we can understand, everything begins with a pulse. And so that's what our bodies are, our frequencies of pulsation. So when I talk like this, this is a certain kind of a frequency field, and it creates a certain frequency field too as you hear it. So when I speak in a voice like this, it has a different feeling when you're hearing it, because it's tapping into part of your own frequency field and invoking sensations and feelings there, pulsation to pulsation. It's actually a phenomenon that's at the root of our biological life, which is entrainment. One frequency calls another into its field. You know, earlier we threw out the idea of resonant fields. You said you were, when I did Jabba Gomaka, when I did gibberish language.
Absolutely.
You said, well, you were watching my gestures and that we were in a resonant field together. So the principle of entrainment, if I had remembered to bring my tuning forks here.
It's okay.
Doggone, next time. I would do tuning fork one, which would go bing. And if I had tuning fork two, which was tuned to the same frequency, meaning number of pulsations per second, and went bing, they could come together in one sound, which would be larger than each of the sounds separately. Together, they would entrain like one molecule to another molecule.
Very cool.
One cell to another. And that makes us something. This is what babies do. You know, one cell comes into the frequency of another and becomes a something else. That's called entrainment. So, skipping ahead here, since we are we are vibrational creatures. We are, each of us is a cello or a flute or a drum, or we're all different, but we're all same, and that we're all responsive to the frequencies that we are when they are in the same field, and to the frequencies around us. So we're responding to the moan of the dog, who fortunately right now is not moaning, or the sound of a siren, or a jackhammer, or a car. And the constant buzz and hum and click and chatter around us is affecting us all the time.
Constantly, absolutely. Yeah. And we know that even, you know, I mean, like you said with the example of the siren, everyone, like, when I hear a siren go by, if I'm driving, I perk right up, I respond to it, that sound. And we're designed to, you know, we're designed to respond to that because it's an emergency vehicle coming through. Not only do we need to make way, but physically, I lift myself. I respond.
I see you. I watch you lifting yourself. And why you're doing that is because our ears, inside our ears, the cochlea of the inner ear, the spiral in the ear, has more receptor cells for high sounds and for low ones.
Really?
Yes, really. And that's why when we have voices like this, we respond differently than we do. Why do we talk when we talk to babies?
Right.
Or little puppies or little anything.
Or the polite voice that waitresses do.
Oh, yes. Like, I'm your wait person.
Yeah.
I mean, if someone were to come up to your table and say, "Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm your wait person." That's a whole
different.
It's very sexy. But that's because you think it's sexy, because it the frequencies are touching the lower part of your own instrument, where, for instance, your lower organs are located. So you're feeling it in your belly and in your lower, what we call the chakras, the lower chakras. Anyway, let's skip out of that one pretty quickly.
How do we bring this through to kind of with this idea that the sound is vibration, that all these kind of different areas are responding to other frequencies around us? How do we know when different areas are needing to be entrained? Or how, let me rephrase that question.
They might ache. You know, or they might be numb, or there might be a part of your awareness. Well, it wouldn't be your awareness, because this is about bringing frequencies into awareness. But there might be something. We're talking two areas here about physical healing or emotional healing or traumatic, working with trauma.
Do you work with all of those, or do you tend to work with physical healing, emotional trauma? Because you're trained as a proper therapist as well, a proper psychotherapist, therapist.
Oh, very proper.
Yeah.
I have a degree in psych. I'm a psychologist. So
yes.
I have a degree, and I've done all those trainings in cognitive therapies and so on.
Yeah.
And family therapy. I actually studied family therapy, which worked for me. Actually, I got so excited when I went back to graduate school. I thought I was going to do something called a quick doctorate. It doesn't exist.
Oh.
But I found
just
that
in
I
and
was
out.
Absolutely fascinated by all the resources that are available here at the University of Massachusetts. Oh, my God. I looked at the catalog, and I took the physics of sound and the biology and all kinds of things that I had never touched in my undergraduate training. Because, you know, I was an artist and I was a poet and, you know, I was not doing science or math. Well, that was a very long time ago, and I'm at the time of life where I want to do everything and I want to learn everything about everything. So I went into graduate school, and yes, I have a master's degree and also a doctorate. So I can talk the talk to people who don't understand how, just for instance, the way that I'm using my voice actually affects them. So if I'm talking like this, where I'm mostly using my nasal resonance, or I'm talking deep in my belly, or I've got the kind of voice that we have when we maybe have the flu or aren't feeling very well, and you talk to somebody, call me up on the phone and I'll give you that voice. Ring, ring.
Ring, ring. Hey, Molly, how's it going?
Oh, it's going fine, Carolyn.
Are you coming into work today?
No. Oh, yeah, because I really feel good. I'm actually feeling a little down.
Oh, well, it sounds like you need to take a day off.
I think so. So why is that? We recognize this. We read each other through our voices.
Mm.
And one of the reasons that we don't pay a lot of attention to this is that our voices are, they're right between our noses, and we're not trained to listen. But we are listening, and we are responding. Why do you feel really aligned with some of those wonderful radio voices? I mean, if people were on the radio and they were talking like this, you'd probably turn them off.
Oh, absolutely. It's as simple as just pressing a button and, you know, changing the dial.
Unfortunately, you're not turning my voice off because you've got buttons in front of you.
Of course. You could. I do. You're talking and I'm enjoying it.
Well, that's good. So one of the things, what I am doing is I'm using my voice in a wide range of frequencies. And that's very pleasant. It plays the harps that we are. My voice plays up and down with the frequency field that you are. So if you and I are friends, which we are becoming, we'll be doing this automatically with each other. I'll pick up some frequencies in your voice just automatically because my brain, my mirror neurons, my empathy receptors are really aligning and training with you in the process of speaking to you.
I think this is really, really neat because from having such a strong understanding of how to work not only your own voice, but your own body as an actor and in theater and as a musician, and having that early training as an expressive artist, and then also kind of coming back around with therapy and understanding talk therapy and understanding how people respond and how the brain works.
Yes.
I think this is real. That's a really cool pairing between the two.
Yes, it's very, very contemporary because right now we've got the ability to look at frequency fields through all these imaging techniques we have in medicine. So we can see the effect of different frequencies of the voice on different parts of the brain and the body. Let me make a leap here, and it goes back to my own story. So when I was doing these workshops in those circles, when we began to do improvisational sounding, when people were safe enough to be able to open their voices and just start making sounds, things began to happen. Headaches disappeared. Memories came up, other things that were not necessarily out there on a list of goals for our workshop began to happen. And I also found that I was teaching something that I'd never been taught. But in the process of that, and I thank my early theater training for this, I was able to let go enough so that I could let a lot of different frequencies of sound move through me. And that gave permission to other people to do it too. So where that work took me eventually, which is a really important part of my bringing this work I call creative resonance into frame, is that I began teaching in Europe. My music took me there, a song called We Are All One Planet, which is the name of one of those albums.
It's also a beautiful song. It's one of the first.
It is.
It is the opening track on We Are All One Planet by Molly Scott. Right. It's a great.
Well, I wrote it for the Women's Peace Movement and for the first Women's Pentagon Action in the 80s. And it's got a great chorus people sing. It's probably as close to a peace anthem as I've written. And I wrote it so that people could sing it. So somebody called me up from Findhorn in Scotland and asked me to come over and be part of a conference there so I could bring that song. And from there, I began to work in Europe, in Belgium and in Holland, and eventually a lot in Denmark and in Germany. And what I want to say about that is I was working in circles of people who whose language I didn't speak. Speak a little French. I picked up a little here and there. But mainly what was happening in our circles was in the sound work, we were all in common language with each other because the body language is common to all of us. So I began to hear and work with stories about the Second World War. And I was working with the children of survivors, Holocaust survivors.
Oh, boy.
I was working with people with very, very difficult stories that sometimes had never been told or for which there was no language to tell them. So what this work outside of language, this work of sound, offered was a way for people to express feelings for which there were no words.
Mm.
And underline that, because that's really the core usefulness, I think, of this practice. This gives an expression to feelings for which there are no words. And I'll go back to, I said that we can be speechless with terror, or there's an experience for that I don't know what happened to me, or maybe I know pieces of what happened to me, but I can't really tell you about it because it hasn't formed in my own mind in a way that makes a coherent narrative.
Mm.
This is the experience of a lot of people from wartime.
Yeah, oh, that's interesting.
And this work, you know, we think about people who come back, contemporary wars, and how, you know, this way of coming into therapeutic work might really be useful. For myself, doing that work on both sides of the war, from when I worked in Germany particularly, because in my own experience, I was alive in the Second World War, and I remember what I remember was the bad Germans. So I had a trauma story inside of me from being a person alive in that time, and didn't want to work in Germany. But there it was, and I began to work with other people from Germany, began to come into my workshops in other countries, and these stories began to come out. And actually, I did very long-term and significant work in Germany. So I developed then these tools of how to work with people with difficult stories, sometimes even in other languages. And then I brought that back and created this creative resonance training work.
So a lot of this, the work that you are currently doing, because you're in private practice upstairs, we're in Florence right now, Florence, Massachusetts, and a lot of the work that you're doing is, it's rooted in talk therapy, but then you also bring all this vibrational healing, this vibrational sound work, this what you have developed, this Creative Resonance Institute, which is comprised of many techniques under that umbrella.
That's right. Energy matters.
Energy matters.
Da-da.
Yeah, that's why you're here.
Well, I do a lot of things, so I hope it. I hope that I'm weaving a web here of understanding that that makes at least some of them illuminated. I do body work too. I trained in cranial sacral therapy.
Oh, cool!
But when I do it, and I developed this again in Europe, working with people who couldn't necessarily tell me their stories in their own language. Doing a kind of a sonic body work, craniosonic work. But I really wanted to get
craniosonic. I like that. I like that a lot. I don't know what it is, but I kind of have an idea, but I like the sound of it.
Well, I'll tell you in Chimago, Chimoli,
Chimacababova. Ooh, I felt something in the back of my head moving.
I want to go back to you mentioned the siren sound when we were talking about affecting you. And I just want to remember for myself and with you, when I first started working in Europe, one of the first things that happened to me doing a session with someone was that I started out with a siren sound, which is a way of loosening up the voice and using the voice vibrationally as low as you can go and as high as you can go. I'm going to back up.
Okay,
so
yeah.
So it would sound like this. So I did this with the first client that I saw privately. It was in Belgium. And she was a therapist. She was a very well put together person, but she had problems with her voice and she didn't know why. So she came to me to help her open up her voice. I did that sound and she was on the floor in fetal position, terrified.
Whoa. It tapped into something deep for her.
Yes. And what I had tapped into was that her family, she was Jewish and her family hadn't gotten out of Brussels in time. And she spent the first 2 years of her life, when she was just learning to speak, in a cellar, unable to make sounds because her family was hiding inside a safe house. It was only safe insofar as everyone was silent during the day. So at the time when normally she would have been developing through the babble, which I just gave you,
that's what babies do,
That's what babies do, and that's how we develop language, is through the sounds that our bodies make. You're making that connection? This is the embodied voice, and we go through it in our own evolution of language as human beings. She couldn't do that because she couldn't make sounds. So there was part of her emotional makeup that had been muffled and unable to find development. And during those 2 years, the sound of a siren was terrifying to her because it was a signal that bombing was going on.
Oh, wow.
So that taught me never in Europe, in the places where people had experienced bombing, make that sound without having an explanation of why we were doing it and making it safe.
Wow.
Sound is enormously powerful. Enormously powerful. Somebody comes in the room and their voice reminds you of Uncle somebody who did something to you that, you know, that is unmentionable. And that's a big, big doorway to your emotional life. So just taking those things, those phenomenal, this phenomenon of vocal frequency back into talk therapy is quite a journey. So I don't start out having people make sounds that are unfamiliar to them, because we have such strictures around making sounds. And that's why public speaking is the primary fear that many people have. People are more fearful of public speaking than of dying of auto accidents or cancer.
I agree, and I 100% agree. Why is that?
Well, why I think it is, a little piece of that pie, is that when we are speaking, we are, in a sense, naked, because we are opening up a conduit through our voices into our body and emotional life. And our voices, I think all of us know at some level that our voices reveal a lot about us.
Everything.
But you know, because you're in this business, you know that people's voices reveal an enormous amount to us that we can't always put our finger on, but we know when somebody talks like this that there's something going on with them that's different than when they're talking like this. Or if the pace of their breathing brings us into the same pulsation, the same frequency field, and we begin to feel flutters in our own body and our own breath begins to tighten up.
I think this work is endlessly fascinating. And I mean, as you're kind of weaving the stories, I'm thinking about all the different applications that could be used, whether it's for musicians, whether it's in the workplace.
Yes.
People can often have a very hard time speaking their truth, expressing themselves creatively.
Yes.
I mean, the range of, in addition to the trauma, mm-hmm. all this kind of stuff.
Right.
I'm just like, my mind is firing right now. I'm like, wow, this could come in handy on so many levels in so
it
many
does.
Different places.
Yeah, because when we have something missing in our lives, it can show up as missing frequencies in our voices.
Whoa. Oh, my goodness. We just opened another can of worms.
Yes,
here.
We did. Yes, we did.
Wow.
So I have a quick story. I was doing a workshop for bankers and business people in Denmark in a place called the Clown Studio. Just a nice open space where we mostly these people were here because their wives had dragged them in. Most of them were men. They stood in a circle in their three-piece suits and they crossed their arms in front of them.
They were not having it.
They kept their hands in their pockets. And, you know, it was really something. It is something to work with people who are unfamiliar to how revealing their own voices are, as well as their body language. I just wanted to mention them because they popped up into my mind, those guys. Most of them really appreciated the workshop at the end of it. So you were talking about the multiple applications of this work. And yes, I love to work with people who want to open their voices. I used to do a lot of workshops called Healing the Wounded Voice. And right now that work is applicable again in this Me Too era because we're looking at how women have been silenced and the gender inequity, and that shows up in people's voices.
Hmm.
Just think about our recent experience with Brett Kavanaugh and how his voice affected the women who were sitting behind him. You got a picture in your mind of what that looked like when Christina Blasey Ford was testifying? I do want to say, because I know that our time is winding down here and you've got me all wound up here.
I know. We're having such a great, stimulating conversation.
I do want to say that the social justice aspect of this work that I... When I moved to the country from New York, I became a movement singer. I became a sort of Western Massachusetts Holly Near, and I used to open up a lot of rallies and a lot of talk experiences with music, because singing together opens people up to being able to listen. So I just want to put that word in for singing. I wish we could sing at the UN. I wish we could all start our congressional sessions. I bet Nancy Pelosi has a pretty good voice.
You know what? Let's have a collective dream that we will all use our voices and start bringing sound healing into our congressional settings and into our government and creating a mediated place where we can maybe not use words to find a common ground, but our primal language.
I think that's a swell idea.
All right. Well, Molly, thank you so much for coming on to Energy Matters today and chatting with us. You have so much going on, and I really think that you're doing absolutely amazing work. How can people find you?
They can find me by contacting me on my website, through my website, or my email is mollyscott@mollyscott.com.
Okay, and your website is mollyscott.com, and that's mollyscott.com.
And my office is here in 140 Pine Street in Florence.
Fabulous. Oh, that's so lovely.
Upstairs from you.
It's right, it's here. You just had to walk downstairs.
So easy. Thank you. It's been delightful.
It's been lovely to have you here as well. So have a great evening, everyone, and be well.